Welcome to the Barth Calderone Wealth Protector Podcast. Our founder, Harry Barth, and his son, Brad, are top speakers on asset protection and estate planning to many incredible groups across the country, including the Women Presidents Organization, Vistage, the Young Presidents Organization, the California Apartment Association, and many more. And now, here is your host, Paul Hitchcock.
Hi, everybody. This is Paul Hitchcock. I'm here with my colleague, Noel Bryce. We're at Barth Calderone. Well, welcome, Noel.
Thanks, Paul. Hi, everyone.
Yeah, and thanks for joining us here on Wealth Protector TV. This is a great topic. We're going to jump into this. It is the duties of a trustee, how to choose a trustee, maybe some other things too. Noel, let's get into it. What is this all about?
So, those that have a trust, whether it's a revocable living trust or an irrevocable trust for gifting purposes, is all kinds of trusts. But in order to have a trust, you need to have some money in it, right? And then you need to have a trustee. So a trustee is like the manager of the money inside the trust. They are doing what the trust requires of them, right? The trust gives them some power to take hold of that money, grow it, and then distribute it according to the rules inside of that trust. So that's very in like very general, simple terms. Yep. Now, I think the most common that we're looking at here is families, right? Couples, they have a revocable living trust. They are the trustees of their own trust, meaning I create my trust and I manage it for my benefit during my lifetime. Pretty simple. Okay. But more often than not, right, we're putting what's called successor trustees into the trust because they're going to step in after the fact, okay, if somebody is incapacitated or passes away. And what we're really looking for, right, is usually when we're doing wealth transfer to the next generation, we're looking at the children or the grandchildren or other loved ones where we're probably going to keep assets in trust for a longer period of time, managing those assets and then distributing them maybe much, much later after the owner of those assets passes away.
Quick question, Noel, I had for you, because you brought the point is the when you're choosing the trustee, you said it obviously is for when you pass away and the distribution, you know, they get involved there. But it's also if there's incapacitation and more of us are dealing with our elderly parents. So is this an issue that is directly involved there?
Absolutely. Yeah. So elderly parents, they are still living, but need a successor trustee because they're not going to be able to manage their own finances inside of that trust. So we need somebody to step in, do it for them. A lot of times it's the adult child, and we can talk about whether that's a good choice or not. And in choosing the trustee, the bottom line is, right, the trustee, somebody need to trust because you want them to make sure they follow the wishes and rules you have laid out in the trust. But the trustee, a lot of people say, well, do they need to be a professional? Do they need to be, you know, experts in financial management? And I say, well, let's look at the situation because every situation calls for a different outcome, as well as every family dynamic calls for a different choice of a trustee. And that's really why it's so critical to work with an attorney versus, let's say, just getting documents just drafted by a professional drafting company or what have you, because the attorney is going to sit down with you and say, okay, let's talk about your family. Let's really nail down the different scenarios where this is going to come up, and let's work through who these trustees may be, and they can advise you properly.
Are there legal things involved with a trustee where they have a legal requirement to do certain things?
Exactly. So part of choosing the trustee is understanding what the heck are they going to do, right? Yeah. What's their responsibility, and can they live up to that responsibility? And so the word responsibility and the other like legal synonym for that is duty. Okay, so there's a professional duty to act as a fiduciary. And these are all very heavy laden legal terms. But to break it down, the probate code has a lot of sections that refer to what are the duties of the trustee from a professional standard acting as fiduciary when they manage those assets for the benefit of the beneficiaries. That's the biggest thing. They're always acting for the benefit of the beneficiaries, not for their own benefit. So you'll see a lot of those duties and responsibilities. They are informing what that acting for the benefit of the beneficiary means. Okay. One of the main things is duty for accounting. Okay. Duty for accounting. Okay. So if we're keeping assets in trust for a very long time, we need to make sure that the trustee knows that they need to account at least once a year or upon request. So that means everything is super transparent. Every dime, every penny that gets spent, there's a reason as to why it's getting spent. It should be spent for the benefit of the beneficiary, or if it's being grown, right, being grown for the benefit of the beneficiary. The other duty is duty to be a prudent investor. Meaning you have to make healthy and prudent, wise financial decisions that are going to grow the assets. So you don't want to, let's say, spend on a stock that you know is in a down market or bearing down, or just be super, super aggressive with your marketing your investment strategy.
Right.
Because in that case, if you're super aggressive, the trustee may lose money, right? And in this case, we may be not okay to take that aggressive strategy because we want to keep money growing in a more safe manner. So there's a lot of ways that the trustee is kind of on the hook, right, for how are they acting to grow the assets and what are they doing to be a prudent investor?
Yeah, because what I'm gathering is it's not a lighthearted role, especially with being the prudent investor. I mean, trustees can get called out all the time, right, for bad investments and get sued and so forth. And that's a really important thing.
They're certainly on the hook. Yeah, they're on the chopping block for liability if they lose the beneficiary money because of a poor financial decision they made. Mm-hmm. Now, let me take you back. So should the trustee then be a professional financial advisor or someone with supreme financial skills? No, not necessarily, because the trustee can employ agents to help them, right? Just because they're named as trustee, whether they're a family or a professional, doesn't mean they know the answer to everything, right? So they're going to enlist a CPA, financial advisors. They're going to read up on what's relevant and important and weigh their decisions. And they can also consult the beneficiary, say, hey, are you okay with this? Because at the end of the day, who are they liable to? They're liable to the beneficiary. So if the beneficiary say, you know what, I'm super okay with this aggressive position, get that in writing, then you're okay, because you're taking an aggressive investing position with the beneficiary's consent, then the liability is no longer an issue, right?
And Noelle, and then when the trustees also get involved with, we mentioned elderly parents, say your parents have cognitive disabilities, trustees stepping in to work with the doctors and all that stuff too?
So the trustee, they're managing the assets inside of the trust, and that's really the limitation that they have. The person or the agent working on behalf of the elderly person in this case is usually the advanced healthcare directive the healthcare proxy agent, medical power of attorney. There's a lot of different terms for it. That's a different document that gives that individual a different legal power and authority. A lot of times it's the same person, but you definitely have to have the different document giving them the power and ability to do that. The trustee can spend trust money on medical needs, but they're not necessarily given the authority to make the medical healthcare related decision. So it's kind of taking us back to a lot of my clients are, you know, pretty simple families. They're not going to put a professional trustee because a trustee does take a fee for their services. A lot of times they just say, oh, I trust my adult children. They're going to get along just fine. If they need help, they can enlist the help of other professionals. I'm going to go ahead and appoint them, or maybe a cousin or somebody, an uncle that they trust. And that's perfectly fine. The trustee does not have to be a professional. They can come in. They just need to be advised. They need to know that their role isn't just I can do whatever I want as trustee, I have all the power under the world, under the sun. It doesn't work that way. As much as they think it works that way, the second they're informed that you actually have what's called a fiduciary duty and responsibility to act in such ways to grow the assets, to keep the beneficiaries reasonably in the know about what's going on, to consult them with major decisions if requested. And then, of course, the accounting and following the trust documents rules, because they could be liable for for their actions.
Okay.
And that's just really important, because a lot of times when we're passing wealth down, let's say for decades, and we want to keep right. assets in trust for grandchildren, aunt and uncle or, you know, adult children may not be the best option there, because you have some family dynamics to consider. Like, you don't necessarily want your sister or your brother in charge of your own trust and your grandchildren's trust for a very long time or something like that.
So yeah,
you
want to
keep that in mind.
This gets into the choosing of a trustee we're talking about, right?
Exactly.
So these are the things you highlight. What else do you highlight with the getting the right trustee in there?
So you want to think about the size of the estate we're working with, okay? It may make more sense to have a family member or a friend or just a trusted professional. It doesn't even have to be a financial professional, just someone with the acumen, the competency to be able, and the financial literacy to be able to handle what is otherwise like a full-time job at times, sometimes even a part-time job. So they need to be available, right? They need to be somewhat young enough to make sense for them to manage assets for the expected beneficiary. So the expected beneficiary, if they're a grandchild, you don't want to give them money until the grandchild is 35 or something
we
need somebody to stick around for a good amount of time. Now, they may not do that. We can list somebody else to come in after them. But if you want that same person throughout the course of the management of the finances until their grandchild's 35, we need to think about continuity, right? Somebody that's old enough to be able to handle it, but not too old to where we're risking them losing capacity or dying. And that's where the professional fiduciary comes in. There are professional fiduciaries who do this for a living. They're just other individuals licensed to do this kind of work. They get paid an hourly fee. And then there's more of the corporate type of fiduciaries, like a bank or a trust company. Mm-hmm. And that's exactly what they do. A lot of those types of companies and banks have a minimum for the size of the estate. So that's another thing to consider. What is the size of the estate? Are we working with $10 million that we're going to grow for the next 30 years? Well, maybe, you know, aunt and uncle and cousin are not really equipped to do that. Or maybe they are equipped to do that and they'll just hire a financial team. Or maybe it's much more worth it to put a professional in there or a trust company, because they know what they're doing. There's no family dynamics to worry about. It's a neutral party. They're going to take a small fee, but that small fee is going to make up for it, because they're going to grow the wealth significantly according to their professional understanding and knowledge. So there's a lot to consider. It's not an easy answer. That's why it's important to work with an attorney and figure out what's best for your family, what kind of risk you want to take, and what makes sense at the end of the day. Because you could say, oh, I want all my four or five kids to be trustees. It's like, okay, let's talk about, does that make sense?
Convoluted. How do you handle it initially? If somebody comes to you for the first time, how do you approach that? What's that process? You know, you sit down with them and you have a thoughtful discussion about all this?
So my process, as I hope other attorneys' process, is really simple. Just get to know the client, right? You get to know the client, things start popping up as relevant to them and top of mind for them. And then I'm spot checking or issue checking what is going on behind those issues that is relevant to them, that's of legal significance. And so if I recommend a revocable living trust, we're definitely going to have to talk about trustees, but I have to get to know their family to figure out, does it make sense, right, for the adult child to be trustee? Maybe they have other issues they're considering regarding their health, or they're trusting them to be able to handle money. So it's just a conversation. After the conversation, I can do my recommendations and analysis and say, okay, this is what I think is important for you. For instance, I'm not going to give names, but I have a client who is very elderly, who only has one sole heir, who's also about to retire. So there's a question as to, okay, if this sole heir is her only successor trustee, well, what if this sole heir predeceases mom? which happens, unfortunately. Right. Now we're left with provisions in the trust that are blank. We don't have a successor after this sole heir. And so we need to make sure we have some kind of trust company or some neutral party, just in case adult son, who's also kind of nearing retirement age and may suddenly pass away, predeceases his mom. Now mom is left with no one to care for her that she trusts, or she was involved in choosing who they are, and was able to have a conversation with them about her wishes. So really important, because you wouldn't otherwise think about this unless someone said, hey, sorry, this is a really difficult question, but what if they pass away before you? What if your children predecease you?
Yeah, because nobody ever thinks that's going to happen, you know, unforeseen circumstances. Life throws a curveball and stuff. I know we have a client now who's didn't get the trust in place, and then the spouse did pass away unexpectedly, and as she was kind of thinking about it, and now it's probate and it's expensive and so forth. So to your point, look at it.
Exactly. Yeah. You want to think critically about it and have an attorney walk you through that process and put some tough questions on the table. But after that, you're going to have a rock solid trust with the rock solid successor trustees who are going to come in and really understand what's required of them. It's easy to just put a family member or a friend, but it's important to talk to them about it too before you do that. I've seen it a lot of times where they'll say, oh, I just put them on, it's okay. And then they never ask them.
And so
look, the trustee, just because they're named in the document doesn't mean they're going to say yes. And they can resign. They can resign from their position just as easily as you appointed them, because they don't have to say yes.
Right.
So it's important to know that the people stepping in are willing, able, and you have at least a couple of them as a backup, and then even tack on a trust company at the end just for safe measure, because what we're trying to do is stay out of court. And if we're left with no trustee at all, then we have to go to court to petition, ask the judge to appoint a trustee. Sometimes there's provisions in the trust that allow the adult beneficiaries to choose a trustee, which is a great backup option. But sometimes you don't want your children to do that, right? Because then they might be able to control what the trustee is doing, and they're not very neutral. There's so many things to consider.
A lot of things.
It's a great topic, a great food for thought for today.
Yeah, no, Noelle, always incredible information. I want to tell everybody that's listening, if you want to get one-on-one with Noelle, because we have a complimentary assessment, you can get with Noelle. She'll hear you out, hear what's going on, wherever you're watching this video, because we stream this everywhere. Get connected to her. You can sign up on this, whether it's YouTube, LinkedIn, whatever, and get with Noelle. It's great. Noelle, thank you. Going to have you back. Always good stuff.
Thanks, Paul. Good to be back. See you soon.
Okay. See you soon.
Thanks.